The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
All right. Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sear here with you live and local in our WTBR studio. It's Friday, December 8th, 2023. Only a few days left to December and only a few days left to 2023 at that. So welcome to the show here this morning. I have a very important topic to bring to you today. We have Brian Burkle. He's the president of the board of the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention. And we're going to be talking about a very, you know, important and serious topic, but we're going to get a lot of good information out there this morning for you. So stick around for that conversation. And first, let's go to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us over the next couple days from the National Weather Service. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy. Highs in the upper 30s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming south this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy and cold. Near steady temperature in the lower 30s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly cloudy. Highs in the upper 40s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. And I was hearing that Sunday is going to be kind of warm but windy, and you might want to bring those inflatables down or in for that day if you don't want to lose them. That's what I'm hearing anyway. And also, we want to say happy Hanukkah out there. Just started last night, so for everyone who celebrates, happy Hanukkah. Again, this morning drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Brian Burkle joins me in the studio. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. So let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got here, and what brought you to this place, and then we'll talk about the organization.
Sure. So the organization is the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention, mm-hmm. and I've been involved with them since their inception about 14 years ago. And the reason I got involved was I'm about 2 years out now, retired from being on the state police, and 25-year career there. And I spent most of that time in the DA's office with David Capeless.
Okay. Yep.
And, you know, as a result of that, we, you know, in my, that role as a detective, we investigated deaths here in Berkshire County, and that included suicides.
Mm.
So I had a lot of exposure of seeing how death by suicide affected and impacted so heavily so many people.
Yeah.
And so that motivated me to be involved with this coalition to see what I could do to hopefully maybe mitigate the rate of suicide in the county. Mm. Another hat that I wore on the state police was as a crisis negotiator, as a statewide position. So that was, you know, literally speaking with someone in the real throes of a crisis and trying to get them to, you know, get them to a safe place.
Okay. Those crises could be anything from suicide, or it could be a standoff of some kind, anything like that.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, right. Mm. So with those experiences, I thought, you know, I wanted to get involved with this coalition.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and then tell us about the coalition. So it's a Berkshire Coalition for the Prevention, for Suicide Prevention.
Correct.
How long has it been around, and how did it start, if you have those details?
Yeah, so it's been about 14, 15 years, and it actually started sort of a grassroots sort of event. There was actually, you know, there's just a call to action, and people started communicating about putting something together.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, we had a meeting at the Crown Plaza, the old Crown Plaza, and there were a number of people who showed up, and we started talking about doing some type of coalition. And you know, and then there was a core group of people that really became more involved. Mm-hmm. And it became a board. We became a 501(c) eventually, and you know, our mission basically is just to try to save lives. And, you know, we believe that by working together, hence the coalition portion of it, that we can maybe do that through public education on the subject, public education on what to do if you do find someone who may be at risk, and you know, just getting the word out there about having these conversations and making resources available to people. So we do a lot of tabling events at events like the Pride event or Third Thursday or anytime we have an opportunity to table, we do.
Yeah,
because it's nice to get those resources out to people.
Yeah. Well, again, it seems like if you have a problem to solve or lives to save, it's not going to get solved unless you talk about it, first of all.
Right.
Right. And get the word out.
Right. And just to be clear, we are not a call center. So, you know, if you get a hold of us, we don't even have a phone number for us.
Okay.
So to reach us, it's going to be over the internet, through our website and so forth. So we don't have a call center. We're not manning calls. All right. There's 988 and other resources for that that we promote. But we're more about outreach, resource, awareness, and education.
Yeah. What are some of the partner organizations that the coalition works with?
Yeah, I mean, we do work, well, first of all, the coalition itself, the board members have always been from a broad background. I explained what my background was. But there are people on the board who are themselves survivors. Either they've lost somebody to suicide, or there are people who were in the medical field, or people who were in the counseling field. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of people who feel that they have something to bring to the table and help get the message across. So, but outside of that, we partner with anybody, really. You know, particularly ones that are in the same lane. You know, we've done a lot of work with the Breen Center, Austin Riggs, Berkshire Health Systems, Love of Tea, which is another organization here in the area. So anytime there's a chance to collaborate with any of those organizations, we do. And they've helped support us on some things, like we have an annual conference. And they those bigger organizations all help financially and with other resources to get that conference underway.
Yep. And those organizations are the ones, as you mentioned, with the phone numbers, the places that you call if you're looking for help. But let's talk about another phone number that's really important to know about, and it's something that's fairly recent. I know that people have tried to get the message out about that, so we'll be among those today to do that. The number is 988, so tell us about that.
Yeah, so 988 is a national number, national crisis number. It's 24/7, and it's went into action a little over a year ago. Like it really got solidified about a little over a year ago. There used to be another number that was heavily published, and if you still know that number and you use that number, it'll still route to 988. So, but it's still out there. Still works. But 988 is what we're trying to promote at this point. So 988 is a $232 million federally funded program. And in 2022, they reported that they took in about 5 million calls.
Wow.
And what's important to know is that if you call 988, it's not, you don't have to just be in the throes of a crisis. You can call for advice, even for a friend, okay, if you're looking for a little direction on what to do if you're concerned about somebody. You can call and just kind of talk about how you're feeling if you are feeling depressed. And there's somebody there who's going to listen. What's important to know, though, is when you call, because it's a national number, and there's operators all across the country, that when you call, it goes to a call center based on your cell phone area code.
So it's gonna,
or your landline area.
It's going to have an idea, basically, of your location or your region.
Well, no. So that's the thing.
Okay, interesting.
So you know, especially nowadays with people with phones, cell phones, they transfer from, you know, they move all over the country, but they keep that old number they've had for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So you may have moved here from Nevada. If you call 988 here, you're here in Berkshire County, and you have a Nevada phone number, it's going to actually be answered in Nevada. And that's okay, because the initial part is going to be a conversation, trying to understand what's going on. If it evolves into a situation where they're going to give you first resources, or if there's an emergency here, then they're going to get that information from you. So just be aware of that, though, too. If you are calling, you know, do explain where you are so that they can, it will help the process move along a little faster. So it is based on that. It is not recorded. All right. There is no GPS. Mm. So these are important things to know.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Because if people are calling.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the reason being is because they don't want anybody to be inhibited about being recorded. They don't want anybody to, you know, some people won't want to call because they don't want someone watching them, you know, from the satellites or trying to figure out where they are. Right.
Right.
So there's that buffer. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that encourages people to be more comfortable about calling and talking.
Hmm.
Now, of course, if it's an emergency,
yep.
They will get you hooked up with emergency services, but that's going to rely on you, the caller, explaining where you are.
Mm.
And I also want to stress that if you are someone who is in a situation who's in crisis, who has actually already hurt themselves, then just call 911.
Mm.
Okay? Just because otherwise you're just adding steps.
Yeah.
But that being said, 988 is invaluable. You know, like I said, they took in over 5 million calls last year. And, you know, the issue here is that, you know, 10, 15 minutes of a conversation can save a life. And you know, even the 911 director, I saw her on an interview recently, and she said, you know, it's very important to understand that it can save a life, but it's not necessarily the operators who are saving a life. It's the caller who makes the decision to save their own life based on that conversation. Hopefully they've been given some tools and some direction, but ultimately it's their decision.
Well, and just the fact that they've made the call.
Exactly.
I would think is that first step, right? To know that you're reaching out.
Right, correct.
And it could also be, as you mentioned, and it hadn't occurred to me, could just be a family member looking for some support or some advice to know, you know, what to do. They might be at the end of their rope.
Correct.
And they say, you know, I've got someone that I need to really figure out how to help, and I don't know how to do that.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a resource for lots of people.
Yep. And, you know, it seems to be a big impact on families as well. It's not just something that impacts one particular person, although I'm sure we'll talk about isolation and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that, you know, suicide affects families and affects a larger, it's almost like a pebble in a pond with a bunch of ripples.
Right. Yeah, the impact of suicide is really great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the immediate family necessarily or those closest to the person who's died. I mean, we've seen this over, you know, time and time again where there's a death by suicide or any sudden tragic death, but by suicide is the subject today, where we see the reaction from your school or from your coworkers or the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really affects people. And the subject of suicide has a great impact on a lot of people. Lots of people have had some experience with loss by suicide.
Mm.
Probably most people listening today have had some experience with that.
Mm-hmm.
They know someone who they've lost. They've maybe had their own ideations.
Mm.
But it's important to have these conversations for this very reason, so that people know that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they're not the only ones in the world that would be thinking about that.
Right. And, you know, the thing with suicide is that, you know, we say that it's the most preventable kind of death, but it's also one of the hardest ones to detect because a lot has to do with stigma. So yep. Someone who is contemplating suicide or has suicidal ideations very well may not be sharing that information with anybody. So that therein lies that problem of trying to detect that, right?
And why wouldn't they be sharing it with people?
Well, the biggest part is stigma.
Mm.
Biggest part is stigma. And that has a lot of effort to try to erode that, break that stigma down so that people are more comfortable talking about it.
Mm.
You know, there's character judgments made on people. And, you know, people don't want to be seen that way.
Yeah.
And they feel alone. You know, they feel alone in the first place. And now they're having these thoughts that are pretty serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, this goes back to our discussion here about having these open conversations because
right.
It really unplugs that mental logjam in a sense and becomes more of an open conversation. And you start to hear what you know, these thoughts that maybe somebody had in their head, they start to hear them when they are actually having those conversations.
Mm.
And it maybe sounds different, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know.
Or now, I guess the other question is there support in terms of, you know, feeling alone about it and thinking that you might be the only one in the world that would have a problem like that, and then realizing that there are other people that might have those same issues. How do you connect those people together with some support? And I'm sure there's we can go into this for the whole hour, really. But, you know, is there a way to say, no, I just need to talk to somebody else who can give me some perspective on this?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to, well, you know, If you suspect that somebody you know is at risk, mm-hmm. right? And I'll get into a little bit more on this later. We'll talk a little more about what to look for, what to do.
Yeah.
But it's going to be about approaching that person and assuming that you're the first one to ask. Okay, don't assume that, you know, we all talk about each other, mm-hmm. right? You talk with your friends, your coworkers, your family members about somebody else. Hey, what do you think's going on with mm-hmm. him or her? You know, mm-hmm. I think things are off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to talk to that person and really find out if there is something wrong. And
that's a difficult conversation to start for a lot of people, right?
It sure is. Yeah. It sure is. But once you do have those conversations, then you can open up a whole floodgate of options for resources and help.
How tied is it with mental health and mental health mm-hmm. Treatment? Because I don't know if it's 100% tied to it or not, but it certainly is a factor. And there have been lots of crises of mental health and not a lot of resources for people to be able to reach out to, right? It's the mental health organizations are really busy and slammed mm-hmm. and you know, it's hard getting people to, and that's all anecdotal on my part. I don't know that that's exactly the case, but the folks I've interviewed on the show have told us that it is difficult to find providers and to take care of everyone that needs help right now.
Right, and there is definitely a deficit in that. And it's no fault of anybody who's in the business who's trying to do the work.
Yep.
It's just that there's a higher demand than there is supply.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, as you and I and friends and neighbors and family members really need to learn a little bit more about what to look for and how to interact
mm-hmm.
and try to maybe get ahead of the crisis. And, you know, be able to open those communications and that conversation, because that alone is going to be a huge impediment
mm-hmm.
to maybe proceeding with suicide. Just having that conversation and knowing somebody cares, even if it's, you know, somebody close to you. It doesn't have to be a counselor, because it's going to be maybe some time before you can get in and
right.
get into, you know, getting in to see a counselor on a regular mm-hmm. basis, or getting in to get the medication or whatever else it might need.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, there are some you know, things that any one of us can do. And that's one of the things that we teach. Is called Talk Saves Lives.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that our coalition does. Most of our members have been trained in this. It's a layman's version of what to do, you know, what to look for, and then, what more importantly, what to do. And so this is something that we go around. We it's about an hour long presentation. We're always looking for audiences.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just put that out there that, you know, if your church or your social club or your business, has some type of an opportunity for trainings or conversations about stuff like this, we'd be happy to come in and give that presentation.
We're speaking with Brian Burkle this morning on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Brian is the president of the board of Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention. And we're talking about, well, it's just sort of getting into it right now and opening that conversation, like Brian said, making sure that we get a chance to talk about it for folks that may need to hear it, that you may realize that a loved one in your life might be in need of that care. And we mentioned 988. We'll mention it a few times again this morning, because again, people don't always listen to the entire show, even though I'd like to think they do. So as they tune in and out, we want to make sure that they know that 988 is the number. But of course, as Brian said, if you're in crisis beyond the point of talking to someone, it's 911, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if someone's at that crisis level and they pick up and they call 988 and they're talking to someone, what is the person on the other end of the line trying to do at that point?
So they're trying to, well, for one, they're going to be listening, okay? And they're going to be trying to assess exactly what it is that the caller is asking for
mm-hmm.
and what they need. And, you know, if it turns out to be that they are in absolute crisis, that they're in that moment where they're seriously considering taking their own life, that's where they will definitely get emergency services there. Again,
mm-hmm.
depends on the caller to be able to articulate where they are. But in the meantime, you know, it's just going to be kind of assessing where they're at, maybe giving advice,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it's something where they could use some additional guidance and counseling, then again, geographically, they'll connect them with services in their area, mm-hmm. and they'll get them connected with a counseling service, with an emergency service.
Mm-hmm. What if it's something that it's late at night and places aren't open? I mean, what type of help is there available 24/7?
Well, there is Berkshire Medical Center, the emergency room is open 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the best resource
locally. Yeah,
locally in Pittsfield and Berkshire County.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, and then aside from 988, we've also got the Breen Center.
Mm-hmm.
They have their crisis number. That's 800-252-0227. That's another resource locally.
Okay. Yeah, repeat that number one more time people who want
it. That's going to be for the Breen Center crisis line. That's 1-800-252-0227.
But you can see also why 988 makes a big impact, right? Because that's mm-hmm. nice and easy to remember. Anybody can jot that down or just have it in the back of their head.
Right. And with 988, too, there's different breakoffs for different, people with different experiences, different demographics, and so forth. So, like, if you call 988, there's actually, when you first call, there's an option to dial 1 if you're a veteran.
Mm.
And you'd be directed with somebody who's more in tune with veterans' needs.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's so many different options out there. There's so many call centers. The Samaritans, it's the Trevor Project for LGBTQ. When you call 988, it's a clearinghouse for all of that.
Hmm. What are some of the, the pressure points on people? We talked about mental health. Is that an indicator if you've got other mental health issues that might lead you down the road towards suicide? Is that something that, should be a red flag for someone? Is it stress? Is it past mm-hmm. trauma? I mean, what are the types of things that will feed in toward someone leading down that road?
Right. So we do know from studies that there's not necessarily one reason that someone considers suicide.
Yeah.
It's usually an intersection of different factors that have come together. So mental health often does play a role in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, they say statistically 1 in 4 people will have some type of a mental health condition at some point.
Hmm.
And when you look at it as a health issue, then that's understandable.
Sure.
Right? As, we don't always have a broken leg. We don't always have a fever. We don't always have a sniffle, right?
Mm.
We also don't always have depression.
Yeah.
But all these things can come and go throughout our lives, and that includes mental health, depression, yeah. and anxiety, mm-hmm. and so forth. I mean, sometimes it's chronic, but sometimes it can be more acute. So it needs to be treated
mainly,
the same way.
Mainly tied to depression and anxiety, do you think?
There's always some factor in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of factors to be considered. They pretty much break them down to 3 different things. Some type of historical thing, such as if there's a history of suicide in your family, that, and it's not necessarily genetic, although they are looking at seeing if there are some DNA indicators that would suggest that you're more susceptible to it.
Mm.
But definitely the exposure to it,
mm-hmm.
It can be a contributing factor for somebody. It makes it, it's another risk factor for somebody if they've had exposure to suicide close to them. Medical issues, we know a lot of the pro football players. There were some issues over the past couple of years where some of them
CTE.
Died by suicide,
yeah.
and they were examining their brains, and mm-hmm. it turned out that they had concussions, and so that could be a head injury that could lead to some of this feeling.
Mm.
Other medical issues may, of course, cause somebody to be depressed because they've maybe lost some of their mobility or ability to do other things because of their medical condition, but also the environmental factors that people usually tend to cling to or gravitate to when they're looking for a reason.
Mm.
Things like bullying, a loss of a job, loss of a relationship, loss of money. And
all of these things that you're describing, I imagine immediately being sort of in different age ranges, right? You mentioned bullying, and I'm thinking, okay, teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking loss of job or spouse or money or something. I'm thinking middle age.
Right.
Loss of, use of, your body or driving or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think of older folks.
Right.
Are there different sort of profiles of people who might be vulnerable to that and, along those lines?
Yeah. So suicide is not unlike cancer. It doesn't discriminate.
Mm.
Okay. However, there are those factors that rise up at different times of different demographics' mm-hmm. lives. So
stressors, basically.
Yes. Mm. And just like you were pointing out, mm-hmm. certain things happen at different times. And actually, the highest across the board, the demographic that has the highest risk of suicide are white males, middle-aged. So you and I.
Yeah.
Okay, we're in that demographic.
Hmm. And why is that, I wonder?
Well, I mean, again, there's all these factors, right? Yeah. But think about all the life changes that maybe happen at our stage. And you just mentioned most of them.
Yeah.
Okay. It could be, you know, a change in your job with retirement. Maybe, you know, the kids are out of the house. Maybe things are changing in your relationship. Maybe there's a, you know, there's some talk that maybe, you know, they feel like they've lost their purpose, or they didn't feel like they accomplished what they wanted to at this point.
Huh.
So there's a lot of things, a lot of things. But again, there's always going to be multiple things coming together at one point. So that is the single highest demographic of risk. But there are other times throughout life, like in the teenagers, from like 15 to 22, the people who are most at risk are black men.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
And you think about some of the experiences that men of that color in that age bracket are going through.
Yeah.
Okay. So each demographic has different times where they spike.
Huh.
All right.
Okay.
And then in general, men can attempt suicide fewer times than women do, but men are more likely to die by suicide than women are. And a lot of it has to do with the means.
Mm.
You know, there's men tend to gravitate to firearms, which, you know, are much more lethal.
Yeah.
Women tend to gravitate towards you know, overdose, you know, pills and stuff like that, where there's sometimes an option to be saved. So it really depends. Like I said, the idea of suicide and the ideology of suicide is indiscriminate.
Yeah.
But there are certain times that different demographics have peaks.
Now, you mentioned men and firearms, and, you know, it's impossible to talk about this subject without going to that area. And also your experience as a state police officer, certainly there's this concept of suicide by cop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there's, you know, some sort of violent interaction between a police officer and a person who might be suicidal. And, you know, that's just a terrible choice to make for a police officer in that situation. You're trying to save someone and you may not have that option. But that seems to be, unfortunately, a growing trend in a lot of ways. Maybe speak to that because you have experience there in both areas.
Yeah, I mean, that's just tragic all around.
Yeah.
Nobody wins in that case. You know, the police officers very often struggle quite a bit after they've had to make that split-second decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything that any police officer I've ever known has ever intended to do or expected to do. You know, we have to prepare for it.
Yeah.
But I know that it's
there
very
must be
impactful.
Training, right? I mean,
sure, there's training in it, but it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah,
That doesn't make a difference, but it doesn't make it easier when it actually happens.
Yeah.
So nobody's looking to do that. You know, and with the issue of firearms in general, I mean, there's many means by which people die by suicide, right? But, you know, firearms are just, by their very nature, they're very lethal,
and
powerful, right?
They're designed for it,
right? And the other thing too is that being a gun owner doesn't make you necessarily more susceptible to suicidal thoughts or suicidal attempts.
Right.
It's just that a lot of times, if you're a gun owner, people who are gun owners who are also suicidal will use that means, and that means is in itself more lethal.
Hmm.
So they say that 9 out of 10 people who attempt suicide survive. 9 out of 10 people who use a firearm do not survive.
Wow.
Okay. You know,
and that's a stark statistic right there.
Yeah,
right?
And I will say this, though, about Massachusetts. So, we have a lot of gun laws, a lot. I can't even keep them all straight sometimes. But the biggest one is keeping them secure, right, when they're not in use. Keeping them secure in your home. And that's very important because nationally, 53% of suicides are the result of using a firearm as a means. In Massachusetts, it's down to 22%.
Wow.
So those laws do make a difference in that regard.
So it's really the availability, and it might not even be, you know, if you're the gun owner, you may not even realize that the accessibility to the gun to someone that you didn't think was going to use it for that purpose.
Exactly.
Now suddenly, you know, you have that guilt also.
Right. So that's the thing. You got to keep it secure because your kids are in their house, your neighbors, people know, let's face it, your kids know where you hide, you know, your cash or the good cookies, for God's sakes, right? So they know where the gun is.
Yeah.
So keep it secure because the likelihood of somebody dying by suicide with a gun is much greater than any other death by firearm.
Yeah. Good information. We're speaking with Brian Burkle this morning. He's the president of the board of the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention. And we're getting the word out. We're opening the door and we're talking about it here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. We are going to take that top of the hour break now. We have lots more to talk about with Brian in the second half of the show. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from MyCom Federal Credit Union, 101 Fenn Street in Pittsfield, where their mission is to continue to promote the principle of people helping people while providing services that meet the diverse and ever-changing needs of their membership. MyCom Federal Credit Union, online at mycomcu.org. And, do you need help heating your home? Berkshire Community Action Council may be able to help. The Fuel Assistance Program is accepting new applications beginning November 1st. This program assists with your primary heating source, including all heating types. Once you're eligible for fuel assistance, you're also eligible for a discount on your electric bill. Go to bcacinc.org for more information.
We all know WTBR is great to listen to on 89.7 FM, but did you know that you can listen to WTBR just about anywhere? We've got a web stream, and it's easy to use. Go to WTBRFM.com on your computer and click play. You can use the TuneIn app on your smartphone and connect it to your car's sound system. Or you can use your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play WTBRFM, and there's your community radio station. WTBR, for the love of radio.
Ready for K is a texting program offered free for families in Berkshire County with children ages 0 to 9. Each week, you receive 3 texts with fun facts and tips to help your child learn and grow. It works. Research shows that the simple strategies built on daily routines like getting dressed or preparing a meal lead to 2 to 3 months of child learning gains. Sign up for Ready for K at BerkshireUnitedWay.org and make everyday moments teachable moments.
People tune in to hear the latest local and national news.
That's not us.
People tune in to hear the latest music.
That's definitely not us.
People tune in to hear political pundits expound on politics.
No, that's not us.
How about people tune in to hear entertaining stories, jokes, odd topics, and laughter?
Oh, yeah, that's us. That's Stuff.
Tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 to listen to the latest Stuff with Bev Prentice and Lynn Arsenault on 89.7 WTBR-FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sondrini.com.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you again on a Friday. It's Friday, December 8th, and you're here in the morning with us. We appreciate that. We're live and local this morning from our WTBR studio on Federico Drive. We're speaking today with Brian Burkle, president of the board of the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention, and we've got a lot more good information for you in the second half of the show starting in just a moment. First, we're going to take one more look at the weather from the National Weather Service and find out what's in store for us over the next 36 hours or so. Let's see if we can do that now.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy. Highs in the upper 30s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming south this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy and cold. Near steady temperature in the lower 30s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly cloudy. Highs in the upper 40s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have the forecast. Thank you very much for that. And, you know, we'll, a little bit of snow on the ground, I think over the next couple of days, that's going to be completely gone. I'm seeing 50s and almost 60 degrees. Is that right on Sunday? Craziness. You know, December is what it is. Maybe at some point we'll have an extended amount of time where the skiers can get up there and start enjoying their ski season. I think already some of the mountains have got enough of a base where you could get up there and ski, but the rain is not going to help them at all, that's for sure. All right, back to our show here. Brian Burkle is in the studio. Thanks again for being here, Brian, today.
Yeah, again, thank you.
Absolutely. And obviously, can be a tough subject to talk about, but as you mentioned in the beginning of the show, if you don't sort of break through and start talking about it, then it'll stay, you know, hidden, and the stigma will continue. So we're opening that up today. And of course, your organization does a great job of doing that, as you mentioned, in many, many different areas. Let's talk about, since we kind of laid the groundwork in the first half of the show, about knowing the signs. If you're a concerned family member, a loved one, mm-hmm. of someone that you think might have some ideations, right? Some ideas that they want to commit suicide. What are you looking for, and what can you do?
So what you want to look for, you know, we talked a little bit before about the risk factors yeah. that we talked about. So, you know, obviously if somebody's having some kind of a mental health concern, then that's a factor. Mm-hmm. If they've suffered a loss themselves, that's a factor. Mm. If they're going through major life changes, these are all times to be kind of vigilant, mm-hmm. all right? But then there's those other warning signs of their actions that are actually taking place. And, you know, it's going to be stuff like, is there a big change in the way they're sleeping? Are they sleeping more, sleeping less than they usually do? Are they eating more or eating less than they usually do? Hmm. Are they giving away things that you know were maybe valuable to them, just kind of handing away their valuables? Hmm. Have they withdrawn from people and things and places that they used to enjoy? Are they going through isolation? Are they choosing isolation? Huh. You know, are they experiencing or demonstrating, you know, rage, apathy, impulsivity, irritability, you know, things we all we all have these experiences, yeah, yeah. right?
And that might be normal for someone, correct. But if it isn't normal for them, that might be a red flag.
Right, and that's the thing, is that ultimately it comes down to this, is that you got to trust your gut, because it's going to be somebody, most likely it's going to be somebody that you know, right, that these red flags are going up because you're recognizing a change, and that's what it comes down to. Is there a change, and then why? So as far as, you know, preventing suicide, there's no magic wand. There's no guarantee to any of this, but these are some of the things that we've learned over the years that have been proven to be helpful in speaking with people who were going through the struggle and explaining what helped them get through it. Mm-hmm. So when you have these concerns, when you do think that somebody's at risk, the basic simple thing is talking to them, okay? But I want to stress one thing, though. If it's a situation, again, this goes back to the emergency aspect of things. If it's a situation where... it's in the throes of crisis and there's a weapon involved or something that's just very dangerous, then you need to withdraw from that and call 911. Mm. Okay, you can't be putting yourself at risk in this process. Short of that, trust your gut. Assume that you're not the first person to ask this person how they're feeling. Right. You know, we talked before about how we talk amongst ourselves and we notice something's off on somebody, right? Like, hey, what do you think is going on with him or her? Mm-hmm. So go to that person and ask them directly. You want to do it at a time that's private. You know, you want to be able to have time to do it. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do this on a Friday evening as you guys are getting in the cars at work and, hey, you know, just, hey, I noticed you've been down a little bit. How you feeling? Oh, I'm feeling pretty lousy. I don't know. I don't feel like even being here anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, get back to me on Monday.
Check in with me
on Monday. Right. So if you're going to ask the question, you also have to be prepared for the answer and to be able to deal with that. And we'll get into what that looks like. Mm-hmm. What I want to say, though, is if you have a concern for somebody and you don't feel confident to be able to have that conversation or have that time, then employ somebody that you think can. Bring somebody else into it. Hmm. Express what your concerns are, what you've seen, and see if they're the one, if they would be willing to make the approach. Okay, so if you don't feel confident doing it, find someone who can.
Yeah.
So, again, privacy and time is what you need to have, and then you're going to be listening. So what you want to avoid, though, is during these conversations is making any kind of judgments. You want to be careful how you ask questions. You don't want to be asking somebody like, you're not going to kill yourself, are you? Right, because already, what does that imply? Just tell me no.
Yeah, right.
So that's not inviting.
You're not going to get the answer.
Not going to get the truth. Mm-hmm. This isn't the time to start having those conversations and giving advice about, oh, life is worth living. It's just that's not the time, mm-hmm. right? If somebody was having a heart attack, you wouldn't stand over them and say, you know, maybe you should start exercising better, if you feel, you know, a little less cheeseburger or whatever. Yeah. That's not the time to have that conversation, right? You got to deal with the fact that they're having the heart attack.
Yeah.
You don't want to be minimizing what they're going through. And, you know, you don't want to say, again, going back to things you don't want to say, you don't want to say, hey, you're not thinking of doing something crazy, are you? Mm. Because they could potentially be in such pain that ending their life is that option. And to them, that's not crazy. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to phrase it that way because, you may not get the answer that you're looking for. Mm. Or, you know, are you going to hurt yourself? Mm-hmm. That could be different than killing yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What you do want to do is, you want to have that time and you want to be listening. You want to let them tell their story. Mm-hmm. Don't be, interjecting with your own experiences, mm-hmm. at least not initially. Okay, maybe there's a time where the conversation develops into that. But first, it's about them, giving them that space and that time to have their conversation. Mm-hmm. Listen to what they're saying. Do ask direct questions. So you can ask, you should ask, are you thinking of killing yourself? Mm. Are you thinking of dying? And there's been a lot of hesitation over that over the years. Mm. People were afraid that if you said that to someone who was struggling, that maybe you're putting that idea in their head. Mm. But that's been debunked.
Okay.
So if the idea of suicide is in their head, it's in their head. Mm. Okay. They've already made that decision, or at least contemplated it. Mm. So you're not creating that situation. In fact, when you bring it up, if they've been harboring that thought and keeping that thought in their head to themselves, now all of a sudden you've asked this very deep question and it opened up this opportunity to have that conversation. It can be a huge relief to that anxiety. It can actually reduce the anxiety rather than build it because now they're like, oh my God, they're actually asking me about that. And then if it actually ends up being a conversation where that's something that they were considering, just the act of talking about it and getting it out of their own mouth and hearing it for themselves in their own ears, has a whole new can put it in a whole new perspective. Mm.
And what if there's immediate denial of something like that, where in other words, the person isn't ready to talk about it, but mm-hmm. you still think that there's something going on. There's an immediate denial. Is that doesn't have to be the end of the conversation?
No.
I would think, right?
No, exactly. You keep on it because it may not come out the first time. Mm. And a couple of things on that is that if they do say that they are considering dying by suicide. You do want to probe a little bit more as you can. Mm. You want to ask them if they have a plan, okay? And if they have means and access to those means. Mm. Those raise the stakes considerably. Mm. Because lots of people have thoughts of suicide, and they've considered it, and they thought about it. It's still at the beginning stages, okay? Mm-hmm. So maybe the answer is just getting them to counseling in the next couple of days. But if they have a plan in place, and it's particularly if they have access to a means, like they have access, their plan is that they're going to use a firearm, and they have one at home, that raises the stakes.
Yeah.
Okay. So
then it could be a very small trigger that could make that happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they've put that extra thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to raise the stakes on that. What you want to do is the biggest thing you can do in that situation and in general when you're concerned about somebody is creating time and space between the thought and the intention and the access to the means. Okay, that's gonna stunt the completion. Right? It's gonna slow things down, maybe even stop it completely. So again, that goes back to securing firearms.
Mm.
Maybe taking somebody's firearms.
Yeah.
Right. If it's somebody who's close to you, hopefully maybe you've even had a conversation early on at some point, like, hey, listen, if you ever have some concerns about your well being or, I'd be happy to I have a firearms license. We're friends, we're family. We're happy to hold on to your firearms for you until you are feeling better.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as taking the keys from your friend if they've had too much to drink,
mm-hmm.
right? If you put it in that context, it's not that hard to get over that hurdle.
Yeah.
Because you're doing it for their well-being, but still, you're not taking them away, you're just putting them in a safe place.
Right.
So that goes back to things like blister packs for pills.
Hmm.
That in itself was a measure to try to create a little distance when it comes to people who are taking steps to end their life.
So instead of having all the pills in a jar, yeah. 50 pills in a jar that could just easily come right out.
You got to pop each one of those little bubbles, right? And that slows you down.
Yeah.
And that could be enough.
Yeah.
You know, they've put all the barriers on the bridges, or a lot of, not all of the bridges, but that's a big movement.
Yeah.
That has helped. And in fact, in some bridges, in some areas, when they've put up certain barriers, they've actually seen regionally a reduction in suicide deaths.
Wow.
Because word got out that this is, you know, this bridge is a good way to do this, right? So then they've put safety measures around it, and it's no longer as viable, and it literally drops the rates down for a whole region in some cases.
And what they found, that all of society can do to make a little bit of a difference here and there,
right? And the thing is that what they've come to find out through studies is that when you remove the means in somebody's plan, they most likely will not try another means, because that's how they envisioned it.
Interesting.
That's how they worked it out. And if you change it, I mean, nothing's an absolute guarantee.
Right.
But generally speaking, it's enough to disrupt the plan and give them time, which is critical, to get the help that they need and reassess.
Yeah.
You know, but building safety plans with people, reach out to somebody, have a buddy system, I mean, especially if you think you're vulnerable or you sense that somebody else is vulnerable or at risk. You know, get those conversations going before it's a crisis.
Right. We're speaking with Brian Burkle. He is the president of the board of the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention here on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. And we want to reiterate the 988 number, just to get back to that real quickly. That is the helpline. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, the crisis line. National crisis line.
Yep. And so someone's there 24/7 to be able to answer a call if you think you're in need of that. And, you know, it's just three digits away from any phone that you have available. It's also, as Brian mentioned at the beginning of the program, a resource for family members and other loved ones, people who are concerned about someone else who just needs to, you know, get some advice or some feeling on how to help someone else. That is a great resource.
Yeah, and the thing about suicide, the suicidal ideation is not in itself terminal. Okay, it's a state of mind, not a trait. So again, if you can get someone distracted, you know, if you can veer off their plan and get that time and distance, that might be enough to get them to a safe place and then getting back to safety.
It reminds me actually of some of the conversations I had with folks from Berkshire Harm Reduction, where they're talking about, look, you know, we can't save someone's life who's already, you know, dead. That's the time to save them. The time to help them is before that happens.
Right.
So, you know, if the first thing you want to do for someone who has a substance abuse problem is to help them with that, whatever it takes to get down that path. And it sounds a lot like that here. You have to take those steps when you can.
Right. And then, you know, when you do have that conversation you realize that somebody is at risk and they need some help, you want to get them to that help, of course. But you know, ideally, you want to have them be part of that decision making, so that they're regaining that control.
Yeah.
That could be part of why they were in the situation they were in. That they felt they didn't have any control other than making that final decision to end their life.
Yeah.
So you want to give them other choices, and they can have control over those choices and get them to have more of a buy-in and get them to services. You know, and the thing is that, like you mentioned, we started this little part of the conversation with what if they don't respond to you the first time?
Yeah.
Then if you are genuinely concerned, you generally think there is an issue here, then you continue. You give them a little space, you come back, ask them the next day, you know, or maybe a couple of days later. You know, if they're perfect, if they actually are perfectly fine, they're just having a bad day or a bad couple of days, and they really are not at risk, the worst thing that could come out of that is they might go, oh wow, well thanks for asking. You know, how can that be harmful, right? So go ahead and ask. You know, you might get one or two people who be like, well, it's none of your business, well, you know, you're now you're nosy or whatever. But for the most part, I think it's going to open up a lot of gates and doors for people. It's like, hey, this person actually asked me one day how I was doing. You know, I was fine, but maybe I looked, maybe outwardly I appeared in a certain way.
Yeah.
But they came to me, they asked me. That's pretty nice of them, you know. And that can build a new relationship, because now if there comes a day when they aren't feeling well, they may remember that and they may now go back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're the one who's maybe showing some signs, that coworker, that friend or whatever may have that memory of, oh, yeah, he or she came to me.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to, you know, I realize we can have this conversation. Yeah. So I'm going to go and ask him or her how they're doing.
And just like all of life, there isn't one personality type that you're going to be talking to about that. Everyone's different.
Right.
And sure. Everyone will react differently to those types of questions, right? You can just imagine the different people in your life, how they might react to that same question.
Mm-hmm.
10 different people will react 10 different ways. And right. Some of them will immediately, you know, be angry that you asked the question. Mm-hmm. And other people will say, wow, that's really nice of you to ask that. Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's the whole, you know, spectrum of reactions that you might expect.
Right. But the intentions are good. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as long as you're doing it in a non-judgmental way, you know, it should be hopefully received well, whether there's a risk or not.
Yep. Brian, talk about some of the pressures that different age groups are under. And I know we sort of tossed a couple things around off air. The pandemic led to a lot of isolation, and isolation sounds like it's one of those things that's a major factor for people.
Yeah. So, I mean, we actually, you know, statistically speaking, here in Massachusetts, in 2018 through 2020, we were actually a 10% decrease in suicide rates.
Hmm.
And then, of course, the pandemic happened.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of a pause for what was going on in general. But, of course, as things are catching up, the after effects have shown that it has led to, you know, a real epidemic of sadness and isolation and depression mm-hmm. that people are going through. And for some people,
unlike anything that anyone has, you know, in this generation has ever been through.
Right.
I mean, very unusual
right.
Set of circumstances where people were really, you know, locked away from friends and coworkers and loved yep. ones in some cases for a long time.
Right. And for some people, they were at a critical time in their development where that was sort of imprinted on them as this is how you do things.
Mm-hmm.
And so they haven't had that experience or, you know, they don't know how to, they don't have as much experience in dealing with people directly and being yep. around people. And I know there was a study about, even with Zoom and everything, as good as it was, because it still kept us connected. Could you imagine the pandemic without it?
Yeah.
I mean, how incredibly isolated we would have been.
Yeah.
But that, there are certain, I think it's pheromones or something that are released when people are face to face. You know, there's actually a chemical thing that happens just by being in the same room with
sure.
somebody
yeah.
versus on
body language.
Television or on the screen.
Yep.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't translate.
It doesn't, right. So your brain is seeing it differently. So your body's reacting to it differently. So it has stunted some people with their ability to communicate and socialize. But yeah, of course, that's had a huge impact.
Yeah. How about social media?
Social media has a big impact too.
Different technology than we've ever experienced
right.
in the last 15, maybe 20 years, but definitely the last 15 years, seems to impact younger folks more, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe social media has an impact for suicide also for older folks.
Yeah.
How does that?
It does, but I think as far as suicide goes, I think it definitely has a higher impact on youth because they use it more.
Mm-hmm.
They're more, their lives revolve around it more.
Yeah.
You know, for me, my frustration with social media is that I have trouble with my passwords and you know, getting things to download and stuff like that, right?
Somehow the hackers never have problems with the passwords,
no,
but we do.
No, I know. I wish you could take a few tips from them.
Yeah.
But when it comes to you know, really impacting their development and their lifestyle, that's youth more so than adults.
Mm-hmm. And they're growing up with it and really coming of age during a time when that is the standard and the norm where, you know, us of a different generation, we did not have that. And we
right.
had, you know, the more freedom of thinking that not everything was ever going to be posted on the internet or someone can't say something about me and have thousands of people mm-hmm. know about it. And that's cyberbullying. So that's
right.
another factor, right, of social media that must feed into this.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. So the cyberbullying and the thing with cyberbullying is that versus the bullying that we had in our lives when we were younger was we'd go home and it was over, right?
Yeah, face to face and then, right.
Got to pause.
Yep. Call your friends
media.
On the phone and talk about it. That was about it.
Yep. If you could get through on the one line.
Yep.
But now it's bombarding people constantly, all hours of the day and night.
Mm-hmm.
So there's never a chance to just kind of catch your breath.
Yeah.
So
and someone intent on bullying someone can really do a job on them.
Yep. And then, of course, you know, things get passed along. Mm. You know, so things that are I mean, social media has great benefits, of course, no doubt about it, right? But just like with anything that has good, there's the bad side, and the thing is that it really, you know, can really magnify and amplify the negativity. And you know, especially with the younger generation, they're more dependent. Their life really is all about that. Yeah. But also, just with all this stuff on Facebook, for you know, going back to the adult version of experiences, all the political stuff that goes on, just the constant barrage of
negativity
yeah. and attacks and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, that can can bring people down for sure.
Yep.
So you know, the answer there is trying to find a balance.
Yeah.
You know, and self regulating and maybe shutting it off at times.
Yeah. Staying positive and staying optimistic is a difficult job, but it actually you have to apply yourself to do it.
Yeah.
And it's hard in the darkest times. Mm-hmm. What about the holidays? And we talked about this off air just briefly, but that generally is seen as a time where people might be more vulnerable to suicide, but you're saying maybe not?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, there may have been a time for that. Mm-hmm. But I think especially post-pandemic, I think, you know, that the isolation and loneliness has just sort of become a kind of dragged through afterwards across the year. And, you know, the idea is that about surrounding around the holidays is that people are more susceptible because they don't feel like maybe they don't have people to celebrate with. Mm-hmm. So they feel a little bit more lonely or isolated. They couldn't get to the people they wanted to, or it's not as, you know, it's not the Bing Crosby Christmas that they thought it was going to be. Uh-huh. Right. But it's really it's a little bit of a misnomer. I mean, you should be vigilant all year round.
Sure.
Watch, you know, keep out an eye out for these signs and these concerns with all your friends, all your coworkers, all year round. Because it, like I said, there's always those different multi-factor intersections of all kinds of things happening, right?
It won't just be one thing that's going to
right.
lead you down there. It's going to be multiple things.
Right, and that could happen at any time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're speaking with Brian Burkle, the president of the board of the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention here on Morning Drive. A couple minutes left of the show, Brian. Let's talk about some of the events that the organization has been involved in, and mainly to get the word out and to raise awareness of this very important topic. I know that there was something called a Walk Out of the Darkness back in October.
Yep.
And talk about that real quick.
Yeah, so that's done annually. Mm-hmm. It's usually at the Berkshire Commons, which is where we had it again this year. And that's meant to raise awareness and money for AFSP, that's the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. Mm-hmm. And so we had, you know, we focused on that one here. We've had a couple events that we did last year in conjunction with the Breen Center called the Carnival, over also in the Commons, and that was a number of organizations and resources such as yoga, journaling, hiking, all these healthy lifestyle things that people can do. And we, you know, it was an opportunity for people to come and sample those to see if maybe those are things that they could employ in their own lives to reduce their own stress, to stay ahead of depression or as best you can, and definitely maybe hopefully stay ahead of any kind of a crisis, right? And be one of those factors that that can help reduce that intersection of issues, right?
Yeah, that's important to talk about too, and we didn't really get a chance to do that for most of the show, but there are ways, you know, staying positive and optimistic is one thing, but okay, that sounds like a great idea. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. Take a few steps, like you said, physical exercise, getting out, getting fresh air. I mean, all those things that help feed into the idea that, you know, you're alive in this time and this is a wonderful place to be. So to counteract maybe some of the darker stuff that happens.
Right. And it's not just exercise. I mean, it's great to be outside in nature. That's a huge, for a lot of people, it's a real factor connecting with nature, right?
Seasonal affective disorder was the other one I wanted to mention, right?
Yes.
It gets dark early, you know. We like having a lot of light. That, I would imagine, does impact people also at different times of the season.
So I just want to say, you know, again, we do offer this training. Please reach out to us through our website if you have any interest in us coming.
And give us that website right now.
Sure. Yeah. The website is berkshirecoalition.org. And our email is info@berkshirecoalition.org. So, but if you just type in, Google it, you know, Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention, it'll populate. Yep. And of course, the first thing that's going to happen when you do that, I think anytime you write the word suicide in a Google search, the first thing that's going to come up is 988.
Right.
And again, I want to stress that's the number one resource for everybody. Yep. That is the go-to. If you have any questions, you don't know what to do, 988.
And I found that that's exactly true because I did that when I was doing a little research to do the show this morning. It's like as soon as I typed it in, bang, 988. So that is the message, is to get that first. And, of course, the organization does so many good things. Brian Burkle, we appreciate your time this morning bringing up this very important subject and opening it up and talking about it. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend and day, everybody. We appreciate you being here. And Bill Sturgeon will be back again next week with more Morning Drive. Have a great day.
Expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hello, everyone. This is the Cultural Pittsfield Radio Show. We're so happy to be on WTBR 89.7 FM. Just had a great day. What was that called? A rockathon with WTBR where we were on the radio all day long?
Yeah, the lockbox.
The lockbox rockathon.
Something like that, yeah.
And it was very successful. It made you appreciate WTBR even more when you heard all of the people involved from its inception to now and all of the people that listen for the various reasons. We're very thankful for WTBR. We are recording this on Thanksgiving week, so we are thankful for WTBR 89.7 FM. My name is Jen Glockner. I'm the director of the Office of Cultural Development for the wonderful city of Pittsfield. We are recording this and going to be talking about all things happening throughout the month of December, which it is a little crazy because December starts on a Friday. December 1st is on a Friday.
Yep. Yep.
And we celebrate First Friday's Arts Walk and in December Festive Frolic during the first Friday of the month, which is December 1st.
There you go.
The very earliest First Friday can be the first of the month. So December 1st kicks off the holiday month with Festive Frolic and First Friday's Arts Walk. We at the Office of Cultural Development at the Lichtenstein Center for the Arts are so happy to host the Wreath Art Auction. We think it's the eighth annual Wreath Art Auction. This is near and dear, of course, to Bev Prentice operating the board. Bev is a wreath artist. Bev has made a wreath since its inception, I think.
I think I missed the first year, but then afterwards I've been every year.
Yes. So how this works is we usually get about 50 wreaths in the house in various forms. Some are your standard wreaths. Others are kissing balls. Others are centerpieces. And others are sleds. We once got a holiday-themed bicycle in the house. I mean, it was just amazing. So we do partner with the Springside Greenhouse Group, and they come out in droves. So you make a wreath. People make wreaths. Artists make wreaths. And the public, all of you, are welcome to come on December 1st starting at 5 o'clock. There are some grab-and-go, what we call grab-and-go options, for a set price. And then